After all the planting, watering, and weeding, comes time for harvest. This hour, how to pick your produce at its peak. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Horticulturists Richard Geron of Iowa State University Extension and Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, will be here. Now, it's pretty easy to see when a tomato is ripe and ready, but with some other fruits and veggies, knowing when to harvest is a little bit trickier. Today, we'll get some tips for how to know when to harvest potatoes, melons, squash, sweet corn, and other garden produce. Aaron and Richard will also answer your questions. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and if you go to all the trouble of growing fresh produce in your garden, it's important to know when to harvest it. We're going to get some harvesting tips this hour, and of course, we'll also answer your questions. With me, Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Aaron Style is here, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here today. And of course, in the garden, when your tomatoes are ripe, it's pretty obvious that they're ripe and it's time to pick them. But there are a lot of other things that we grow in the garden that are a little more mysterious, aren't there?
Challenging.
Yeah.
So let's talk about one that I think a lot of people have questions about. Let's start with potatoes, because, of course, everything that's going on is going on underground.
Right.
And how do you know?
Well, you can harvest potatoes earlier. Those are the new potatoes. They have really thin skin. They don't store very well. In fact, if you do harvest them before the tops kind of die back, you would want to use them or eat them within a couple of days. But if you want to get the potatoes to a spot where they can store for some time, you have to wait till the tops die back. And some of us are starting to see that already, especially with the hot weather we've had this summer. But usually it's about the first part of August when potato tops will start to brown and die back. And you can dig up a hill, see if the skin is relatively, firm. If you can scrape it off really easy with your finger, it's not quite ready yet. And then if they are, you can dig the hills up and brush the dirt off and then get them cured for storage.
So with potatoes, I mean, does the plant have to completely die back or just look a little off?
For the most part, no. I mean, you're going to want brown flopped over foliage on top. Yeah.
All right. And if you wait longer, what does that do?
You know, they can stay in the ground a little bit longer, but if we have a period where it starts to get really wet again or something, they may start to resprout. And when that happens, they're not usable. So you kind of have to balance it a little bit there. You can't let them sit in the ground too long because that may happen. But if you pull them out too early, they may not store as well.
All right. So you clean them up and cure them for storage. What does that entail?
Well, it's kind of a hot, a relatively warm spot, and you want to sort them out. Anything that you accidentally hit with your spade or with your fork, you're going to want to sort that out. Use those first. But you're going to want to cure them for at least a couple of days, as much as a week, and so that kind of outer skin can kind of dry up a little bit and get a little bit more firm. And then they can go into storage in a cool, dark location.
All right. Well, and since we're talking about things that are underground, let's talk about carrots, too, because that's another vegetable. There's a lot going on, but you don't see it.
You don't see it. And carrots are a little bit easier. The little orange tops will start to push up out of the ground when they're ready to go.
All right. So they have a done button.
Yeah. On them. A little bit. Yeah.
All right. Any other underground crops I'm not thinking of?
Well, onions are another big one.
Sure.
And onions are a lot more like potatoes. The tops will start to yellow and will probably fall over. And when they fall over, even if they're not completely brown, once the tops fall over, you can pull those onions out of the ground. Leave the tops on for a couple of days, put them in a well-ventilated, warm area, and then you can cut the tops off. And your goal for storage is to get them to dry down so that where the stem attached is very dry. You shouldn't see any moisture when you kind of squeeze or poke at it. And the outer layer will start to get papery. And then you know they're ready to go into storage.
All right, let's talk about melons because we can see the melons. But, I mean, a lot of people talk about their strategies for buying a ripe melon at the store. I mean, in the garden, it's even trickier.
Yeah, and there are just as many of those strategies, quote unquote, that people employ for melons too, especially watermelon. And it's tough to rely on things like the sound. Or the other one I love is when the little tendril dries up next to where it attaches to the stem, and that's not a very reliable way. The best way for watermelon is to watch its belly. So when the fruit's immature, the belly where it sits on the ground, if you pick it up, it'll be bright white. And as that melon ages and matures, and once it's ripe, that melon will turn to kind of a creamy color. And that's when you'll know it's ripe. You can use the same technique in the grocery store too. So, you know, a nice yellow, creamy yellow belly means the melon's ripe.
All right, so stop listening to the melons.
Yeah, and there are people who swear by it, but it's hard to teach somebody that thing. And it's hard to show somebody or tell somebody what that sound is. And so it's not a very good one for us to recommend.
Now, something tragic that happens in gardens every year, it seems, are the melons that go too long or too far, or you get a big rain and your melons split.
Yeah, I know. And that's hard because there's not much you can do about that. You can't tell Mother Nature to stop raining if it's raining.
But if you've got almost ripe melons and it looks like it's going to be a big rain, should you run out and pick them?
I don't know. I think you would probably be better off to wait and see what happens. Even if it splits open, you can still use it. You just have to use it right away.
All right.
Yeah. And the melons, most of the melons are really easy. When the stem slips off, it's ready to go.
Musk melons and
cantaloupe.
Others. Okay.
Yep. And the other indicator is the blossom end. So the end opposite where the stem attaches will start to get a little bit soft. And then, of course, they smell like wonderful cantaloupe and muskmelon. So that's the other cue.
All right. So with those, you really can tell by smell.
Yeah. Yeah. When they start to smell really good and that blossom end is a little softer than the rest of the melon, they are ready to go.
All right. Well, let's talk about squash because that's another one. They grow, they look great, but
How do you know? And my experience has been a lot of gardeners, especially with summer squash. I'll speak to summer squash specifically here. A lot of gardeners accidentally or not knowing let their squash get too large. Summer squash is harvested and enjoyed immature. So you want to get out there before it gets really big and tough and seedy inside. And for things like zucchini or the long-necked yellow squash, this is when they're only about 2 inches in diameter. They're only going to be 6 to 12 inches long.
And they can go from that to way
they get
too big
way
in like a
bigger
day, right?
Yeah, and that's one of the keys for things like summer squash. Green beans are another one that you have to check often because they are both vegetables that we eat when they're immature, and if you let them go too long, they don't taste as good. And zucchini gets way bigger than 12 inches long, way bigger. And so,
like baseball bat size.
Baseball bats, yes.
So, okay, another piece or kind of produce that grows really fast are cucumbers too.
Yes.
So that's another one where you kind of have to get in there and you have to know what size you want, right?
Right, right. If you're gonna do pickling, you're gonna want to pick them smaller when they're only maybe 1 to 3 inches long. If you're going to use them for slicing, you want them a little bit longer, about 2 inches in diameter. And then the length will vary by cultivar, but about 2 inches in diameter. If you let them go any longer, that's when the seeds start to get really big inside and they're not as nice to eat. Cucumbers, summer squash, green beans are the kinds of crops that you want to check every other day or every 3 days because if you don't keep up on the harvest, they get too big. And things like cucumbers and even green beans, you will reduce harvest because they'll kind of stop producing if fruit is left on the plant too long.
All right. So you can't go on vacation.
Or you can have a neighbor come over and then you pay them by just letting them pick what they want.
Right.
Yeah.
Since we've been talking about squash, let's talk about winter squash too. I know that's looking way ahead, but
yeah.
that's also similar in that you really can't tell by looking.
Yeah. Well, and winter squash, I think, is a little bit easier because the squash this is fruit that we enjoy when it's mature. So butternut squash and pumpkins and acorn squash, these are all things that will be much later in the season. You're going to wait until the rind is very hard, so very difficult to puncture with a thumbnail or something like that. It'll also get dull. It won't be shiny on the surface anymore. And you'll want to harvest those when they get to that point, and you'll want to leave the stem on it. And then they usually store really well if you harvest them at the right time.
If you leave them out and you get a hard frost, is that going to affect the product?
Not usually. And for some folks, that makes it even easier because all the vines die back and then you can see all of them sitting there and you can find them a lot easier.
All right. So convenient. And I want to talk about sweet corn. We're at the height of sweet corn season. There's nothing better than perfectly ripe sweet corn, but it can go too far and get a little long in the tooth.
Very easily.
All right, so how do you know?
So for sweet corn, you're going to look for silks that have started to brown and dry up, and then you're going to test a few. You're going to pull one side of the ear down, look to see if all the kernels have, for the most part, fully filled out, and then you're going to puncture a kernel with your thumbnail or your fingernail, and the liquid that comes out should be kind of milky. And if that's what happens, harvest right then. And then hopefully eat it that night because the longer it sits, the more kind of chewy and starchy it'll get.
So if you plant, I know that sweet corn growers who sell sweet corn, mm-hmm. they stagger their crop.
For this very reason.
Right. So, mm-hmm. But if you planted sweet corn in your garden and it's ripe, is all of it ripe?
Usually, yes. It kind of ripens up all at the same time. Now, you can put it in the fridge, and you'll want to get it in the refrigerator as quickly as possible. And then if you have a lot of it, that's when you do things like freeze it and those kinds of things. But if the liquid that comes out is not milky but clear, then it's not quite ripe enough. And if the kernel is really tough, then it's probably gone a little too far.
All right. And so staggering it even in your garden might be a really good idea.
It's a great idea. Yes, absolutely.
All right. And I'm going to ask one more. We've got to go to a break here in a moment. But kale is another question because, it's a very popular garden crop.
It is. Yeah.
And it's very different at different stages in its development. So what's your advice?
Pick it when it's at the stage that you like it. And it's a leafy green like lettuce and spinach. You kind of harvest off of it as you need it and want to use it. And so if you want it bigger and kind of more firm because you're doing
toothsome.
Because you're doing the salad that needs got this really heavy dressing or something and you need a really firm kale, then pick it a little later. If not, then pick it a little earlier.
All right, and do you believe that kale gets sweeter after a frost?
I don't know. A lot of that stuff does taste a little bit better after a frost. Brussels sprouts, too.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Richard Giron is here as well, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and they are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got a number of people on the phone lines already. Let's go to Mary in Iowa City. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Okay. I have a couple of questions. I have Japanese eggplants, which are wonderful. I mean, they're just producing like crazy. But as they get bigger, the blossom end is rotting. And so I harvest them quickly and cook the rest of it. But I'm wondering, I've heard of blossom end rot. Is that what this is, or what about it?
It very well could be. Mm-hmm. That can occur on tomatoes, most commonly on tomatoes, but it also occurs on summer squash. It could occur on peppers and also eggplants. So possibly blossom end rot. And the best way to discourage that is to try to maintain an even moisture supply during the growing season, especially during the fruiting period. And so water on a regular basis when it's dry.
Okay, okay. All right, the other question is, my rhubarb, which has been just fantastic, all of a sudden some of the spears of the, you know, are wilting, just vroom, and the leaves are turning yellow and folding up. The young ones are just fine. I put some diatomaceous earth around because I've had great good luck with that with the rose mallow, and it's kept it completely insect-free for the summer, where last year was eaten up alive. So I just put that on yesterday. I don't know whether that'll have any effect.
Yeah, I would assume that's not insect-related. I would assume maybe a crown problem, a root problem. If the leaves totally dry up and turn brown, I would remove them, and hopefully they'll be okay next year. But there's really no treatment if you have a crown or root problem. So hopefully that's not the case, but it could be.
Mm. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Mary. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Sarah is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning. I have a question about basil. I let my basil go. It got away from me. It bloomed a little bit, and now it's bitter. Can it be saved if I trim it back, or do I just have to start over?
I would just cut it back.
Yeah, I would cut it back, and you'll probably get some regrowth that will hopefully taste better.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. So if basil goes to seed, it doesn't taste good. That's the...
Right. It tends to have its best taste right before flower bud formation. And when it's actually blooming, not so great. But if you cut it back, it grows back again. So that's fine.
All right. So you can go on vacation and renew your basil
well,
when you get home.
Yeah.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Christine is on the line in Storm Lake. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I purchased a blooming tree peony 2 years ago. It came up last year fine, perfect bloom. This year it came up with divided stems. I understand maybe I froze out the base of it. Is there any help for it? Can I bring it back to a tree peony style?
I'm not sure that you can. Some of the tree peonies are grafted, and in northern Iowa, their hardiness is a little bit iffy. And if everything above the graft dies and it comes back from the root system. And if that's the case, it's never going to give you that plant that you purchased. So if that happened, there's no way to reconvert it back to what it was.
Thank you. That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Christine. Thanks for your call. 866-780-9100. Alberto is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I am a new homeowner, and I am looking for a plant with a good root base or something that can drink a lot of water to help mitigate the water that makes it through the foundation of my home. Is there a good plant to put around the house?
There's probably not going to be a plant that's going to solve that problem for you. You know, there are a lot of plants that can be thirsty. Turf is probably one of the biggest ones, but it's not going to solve that problem for you.
Bummer.
Yeah, it's not a pot of water. Yeah. I'm not really looking for a solution. Maybe just, you know, should I do hostas or, you know, something that, you know, is there something that's really good for kind of putting around the house that can take that, you know, steady drippage of water, you know, that makes it down off the gutters?
Okay, so it's a soggy area, so even if it's not flooding your basement, it may be pretty damp for some plants. So what do you guys think about that?
Yeah. Is it get a lot of sun or is it more shade?
I would say kind of 50-50. It's you know, by the evening it certainly gets pretty sunny there in the back or right in the garage in the sides of the house.
So, you know, things like hosta can tolerate that kind of condition. I would get more of the green leaf varieties. Afternoon sun's going to be really hard on them, though. So it's, you know, you're going to have to kind of play around with it a little bit. Things like if it's got a fair amount of sun, you can do things like hibiscus. Hibiscus likes it a little bit warmer. Some ornamental grasses like miscanthus might do okay there as well. Maiden grass. Oh, no. What else should I add to this list?
Obedient plant.
Yeah.
It likes moist soil, yeah. So you can put that in there. So.
What was that last one?
Obedient plant is the common name.
Now, if Alberto wants to plant, say, a rain garden, which would hold more water, where should he start with that?
Get it away from the house, probably.
Okay.
Figure out a way to change the grade so that you can get this water flowing to a different spot. You can get a low-lying area that will collect water, and then in there you can plant some of these moisture-loving plants. And if you can get it in full sun, there are more of them in full sun that like full sun. And so if you can get the water to a spot that gets more light, there are quite a few grasses and some of the things we also suggested, a few shrubs that could do really well in that situation.
All right, Alberto, thanks a lot for your call and good luck with that. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's do an email question here. This one is from Tyler in Des Moines. He says he's got a couple of questions, so we'll get the first one first. He says, I'm pretty sure there's honeyvine milkweed growing under my deck and sprouting randomly throughout my yard. Mm. How can I get rid of all of it?
This is a tough one. This is a tough weed. It looks a little bit like bindweed, but it has a very different flower and fruit. It's very, just like milkweed, it's very seedy and gets around very well, and it's a perennial too, so that makes it really difficult. I know folks who pull it when they see it and eventually exhaust the plant, but you got to be really on top of it. I've also known folks who have basically, I'll call it for lack of a better term, set traps where they put in bamboo posts or something like that to encourage it to crawl it up, and then you can treat it with a non-selective herbicide, which can be somewhat effective, but this is a tough weed. I don't know. What would you add, Richard?
It's going to require persistence.
Yes.
Patience. Repeated efforts, basically.
All right. Stay at it.
Right.
So his second question is lengthy. We'll give this one a try. He says, the previous homeowners used their crushed concrete to have a two-tiered backyard. We finished it off with a retaining wall and put over 36 tons of dirt to fill it in. I planted grass last fall, and with the warm November, it came in great. This spring, it was very thick and healthy, but once we got that two-week drought, it began turning brown, and now much of the new grass is dead. This dying grass is exposed to the sun all day, but there's some grass growing next to my garage, which gets a decent amount of shade, which is going well. Obviously, this concrete isn't going to hold water. It'll just drain quickly away, and there's anywhere from 2 inches to a foot of dirt on top of the crushed concrete. Could it be that the grass roots can't find water, or could this be grass that doesn't do well exposed to constant sun? He has a couple more theories there, but...
Well, I think basically what may have happened was that it was done last fall, and then we had a hot, dry late spring and summer. And I think the grass simply couldn't handle it. It was still fairly young, not very well established. And I guess my question would be, is the grass actually dead or is it dormant? And so I would be inclined, I would suggest maybe watering the turf, doing that once or twice a week, and see if the grass will green up. And then if it doesn't, then I would probably go out, let's say around latter part of August, and sow some grass seed.
Okay, this is obviously very well-drained soil. Is that going to be a problem?
No, it shouldn't be. Okay. Grass needs about a good foot of soil. If you have a good foot of good well-drained soil, that's adequate. So,
all right, so the parts where there may just be a few inches, that could be a problem.
Right, right. If you have a good foot of soil, that should be sufficient.
All right. I think we got that one. All understood. Thanks a lot for your question. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go back to the phones. Karen in Mount Vernon. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, for the last couple of years, we've had problems with our sweet green peppers, and they bloom. They set the vegetable very tiny, and then it just vanishes. The vegetable goes away. And we've actually moved the plant. We've actually moved where we have the peppers to, in case there was something in the particular area. And we have quite a large area, so it's really far away from where it was originally, but it's still happening.
It may be a weather issue in that peppers are really finicky as far as temperatures. They don't like extreme heat. And what may be happening is that during the days when it gets above 90 degrees, for example, it may be flowering, but the high temperatures may be interfering with pollination. So we're not getting sufficient or complete pollination. And because we're not, the fruit may start to form, but then simply shrivel up or abort and fall off. So that may be the issue. So sweet peppers tend
to... That sounds like what's happening.
Sweet peppers tend to be much more finicky than, let's say, for example, hot peppers. They can tolerate...
Yeah, no problem with the hot peppers.
Right. They can tolerate the higher temperatures much better. So I'm thinking this may be a heat issue, and you simply have to wait till a week like this week, for example, where we're having temperatures in the 80s, which is perfect. 60s at night, perfect. So hopefully at this point, if it's blooming, they'll actually develop into mature peppers.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Karen. Next, let's go to Richard in Fairfield. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a problem with grapes. We have grapevines in my yard that we've had for about the past 20 years. When we first moved in, they were producing quite a bit of grapes, but they haven't for quite a while produced any. Last year, I trimmed them back, pruned them pretty severely, and still nothing. I'm wondering what to do about them.
Well, I think this is kind of a pruning issue, possibly. I'm assuming the plants get plenty of sun, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So the important thing to remember with grapes is that they bear fruit strictly on the previous year's growth. Older growth does not produce the grapes or clusters. So you want the vines to grow during the growing season. Then the following year, in basically March, you want to go out there and prune back some of that growth because there's going to be too much. And so you want to prune off some of that new growth, but leave some to produce the actual grapes. And we typically suggest, for example, that if you do nothing, that vine may have, let's say, 250, 300 buds capable of producing fruit, which is way, way too much. And typically what you want to do is retain around 40 to 60 buds that are going to produce actual grapes during that year.
Okay. So I did do that last year. I should say that most of the years that we've had these grapes, we've rented out the house, and the grapes were pretty much neglected. We mm-hmm. would trim them back, but not as much as they should have been. But last year, I did trim them back to, like 40 or 60 buds or whatever.
But they didn't produce anything at all? Okay.
Nothing.
Well,
the other things that make me wonder about production, sun is one of them, and the other one is, especially if you do any fertilizing in the lawn, that may impact nearby plants like grapes. So if the soil is too fertile, a lot of times you don't get good fruit set, or if it's really bad, any fruit set, because all the plant does is just grow, and doesn't actually produce fruit.
Right. If for example, they were flowering, and someone applied a broadleaf herbicide, and there was considerable drift, that could affect the flowers where they don't develop into fruit. But if that were the case, I should be able to see some very visible symptoms on the foliage too, where I would see some cupping or some twisting of that growth, and that would be a clear sign that maybe they were exposed to herbicide drift and that caused the actual flowers to abort and fall off. That could be a possibility.
All right. Well, Richard, good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. Let's slip in an email question here before we get to our break. And this is from Kevin. He says, are persimmon trees a realistic option for southeastern Iowa? I believe they're zone 6. Thoughts?
We can grow those in southern Iowa. Yes, absolutely.
All right. And he also wants to know if there's much difference in fruit quality between the Asian and American varieties.
Oh, I don't know on that. I couldn't say. One thing about the persimmon, it is a tree, and it does sucker, which means it sends up shoots from the roots. And for some people, that's a very annoying thing, just so they're aware of that.
All right, and we'll see if we can slip in one more. This one's from Jackie. Would a fungicide application be helpful to stem lawn fungus, or should I hope it recovers by next year and do nothing?
Typically, in a lawn situation, we don't use fungicides. They're typically not very effective. They may be okay in a golf course where they're basically applied on a regular basis, but in a home lawn, they're not very effective. So normally what we try to do is try to maybe change the environment a little bit and so the fungus doesn't come back.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, also Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and you are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. You can join us, 866-780-9100 with your questions. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I've got a couple of Twitter comment and a Twitter question here. This one is from Mac. He says, don't forget to pick a winter squash right now. They're better than summer squash and work about the same. And I hadn't heard of eating immature winter squash before. Is that something you guys are familiar with?
Not a lot, but I would imagine it'd be any different than zucchini or patty pan in that regard.
So. All right. Well, and Mac says it's better, so... We'll have to give it a try.
Yeah.
All right. And Brooke says, can you discuss how to control the purple thistleweed? I have a yard that's overrun with them.
Well, if it is some type of thistle, many of those have very deep, very extensive root systems. And you simply have to destroy that entire root system. Otherwise, they'll come back from those portions still in the ground. So it's very difficult to do. If it were a small patch... I would be inclined to use something like glyphosate or Roundup, and it may take more than one application over maybe a couple years, but you have to be persistent. But many thistles are very hard to control by digging because you're not going to get the entire root system.
Very deep taproot.
Very
root,
deep,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's very difficult.
All right. Stick with it.
Right. Persistence again.
All right. The answer to most things in the yard and garden. Let's go back to the phones. Craig is on the line in Marshalltown. Hi, Craig.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a large patch of coneflowers that I'm growing in my lawn or in my yard, and most of them are doing really, really well. But every one out of, I don't know, five is all shriveled up and dying. And I'm just wondering, is this just artifact of the drought conditions that we're having right now, or is this a fungus or some sort of insect that could be affecting these coneflowers? Because like I said, most of them are doing really well. Every one out of five is just shriveling up and dying.
Yeah, I would suspect it's a problem. It's not the weather. They can handle hot, dry weather pretty well. So I suspect there's a problem and most likely some type of pathogen or disease. Can't identify it on the radio, but... I would suspect that if the plants appear to be dying, I'd be inclined to maybe dig those up and discard them. As far as trying to identify the problem, if you see another plant doing that, before it's totally dead, I would dig it up, put it in a plastic bag, and send it to the plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State, where they can examine that and possibly identify it as far as what it is. But I would suspect it's some type of pathogen or disease.
Oh, okay. So once I find out what it is, then I can take some action.
Right. That might give you some idea how to take care of it in the future. Yes.
And right. Does he need to be concerned about that spreading?
Not to other plants, as far as something like, for example, peonies or daylilies, no. But probably something very specific for coneflowers.
All right, Craig, thanks a lot for your call. Pat's up next in Mason City. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how you doing? I have some broccoli this year. I always have great broccoli. This year, I have a lot of foliage and no heads on it. Usually, I'm picking broccoli by now, and nothing's coming up, no head at all. Just a lot of foliage.
Okay. When did you plant it?
Oh, end of May.
Okay. It may have been a little bit too late. Something stressed the plant. And because of that stress, then it really isn't able to form a head. And maybe because it was planted fairly late, maybe it turned too hot too quickly. And because of that stress, the heat stress, it's not able to form a head. But typically when you're dealing with things like broccoli, if something will stress the plant, then typically they don't go ahead and form a head. They may form some really nice attractive foliage, but they simply don't form a head. So I think something stressed the plant, and because of that, it's not forming a head, and possibly the heat.
Well, I'm thinking we had a dry spell for a while, and then all of a sudden 4 inches of rain and within a week. You know, so the foliage is great, no head at all. So should I just pull those out and say, bummer for this year? And
I think so.
Try next year again?
Yeah, and I would probably try getting them in the ground next year around late April, early May in Mason City.
Okay, because I've always had good luck at the end of May, you know, but not this year, I guess. So go ahead and pull them out, you're saying, huh?
I don't think they're going to form a head, no, unfortunately.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Yeah, thanks, Pat. Sorry for the bad news. Will is on the line next. On the road. Hey, Will.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I had to take out an ash tree because of lightning strike. Just wondering if there are any recommendations for a fast-growing replacement, really. We're in an established neighborhood, so there's lots of trees around. Don't want to leave a big space for too long.
Okay. I think I would kind of look in the neighborhood and see what is the predominant tree, maybe, and plant something different.
They're all trees, basically.
Right. Trees that I would definitely consider would be things, for example, a maple, possibly one of the silver maple, red maple hybrids, one of those possibly. I would consider a oak, for example, maybe a red oak. I would consider a linden. There are many cultivars of linden. I would consider a honey locust, which is a native tree. So I would consider those trees.
I would add ginkgo to the list, Kentucky coffee tree to that list, and some of the new hybrid American elms that are on the market would be good additions as well.
All right, and since Mark Vitosh is not here today, just out on Ragbri, not answering tree questions probably, I should say in his stead.
He still probably is. I bet he is.
It's probably true. Anyway, I should say in his stead that you also should take a look at the rest of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm, right.
And make sure that you're not planting the same thing everybody else has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? All right. Now Mark will be happy when he gets back. All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Will. Rusty's up next in Fort Dodge. Hi, Rusty.
Hi there. Yeah. This year, in my garden, I seem to have a little gray beetle type thing, a little gray and black beetle. And what I could find out was it was called a blister beetle. I don't want my kids to get near these things in the garden. They love to go to the garden. What's the best pesticide to get rid of these things so they don't come back next year?
Well, normally they're not a problem. In fact, they're kind of regarded as beneficial because they feed on the eggs of the grasshopper. So, but for some reason this year, they're much more numerous. I would assume that next year they'll be back to normal where there's just small numbers. You can use insecticides, things like, for example, 7 or 8 should be effective. Definitely don't touch them, because if you touch them, it's going to cause a reaction to your skin, so stay away from that. But they're normally not terribly destructive in the garden as far as eating things, and so we kind of ignore them in most situations when their numbers are small.
All right, so...
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Rusty. We have been hearing more about them than
yes,
usual this year.
Yes,
for sure. All right, Steve's up next in Toledo. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Yeah, I have a pumpkin that I was growing, and early in the year it had some bugs on it, and I put some 7, and they died. And the pumpkin was doing great. I picked some blossoms off so I didn't have too many, and they were big. And then within a period of a week, they started curling up and dying. And I was wondering if it was a bug that I had got in the root, you know, something on that order.
The vines were curling up and dying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they just, even though I had pumpkins,
right?
It just died.
Yeah. It sounds a lot like squash vine borer or something, some kind of borer could do something like that. The other thing, the pumpkins do require quite a bit of water. And if we go through a dry period, they like to be watered, but they don't like to sit in water. So if the soil is really heavy, you can get some crown rot too. What would you say? Okay.
I would also add that the vine crops as a group are very susceptible to a number of wilt-type diseases too. So that could be the case. What I'd probably suggest is maybe if you have a vine that's wilting and dying, I would pull it up, and I would take a knife and cut it near the base and look inside for a white pudgy insect. That would be the squash vine borer. If you see that, you know exactly what it is. If you don't see that, then I'm more inclined to think it's probably a wilt disease of some type, which you can't really do much at this point if that's the case.
And if it's the squash vine borer, what can he do?
Well, next spring or next year, around June, you can apply an insecticide to the base of the vines to basically kill that insect before it has a chance to bore into the stem.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot for your call. Let's get back to some email questions here. This one's from Dave. I had a new plum tree that I planted last year. It didn't leaf out, so when I was convinced that it was dead, I cut it off about a foot from the ground, planning to get to the rest later. Then it shot out some branches, so I didn't pull it, but the branches come right where the graft is. Is there a way to tell if they're from the root or the grafted part?
Well, typically where they're grafted, there's kind of a crook in the stem. And if it's coming, the shoots, if they're coming from below that crook or
like swollen bend, area,
right, yeah. Swollen area, that's coming from the rootstock. That's not what you want. If it's actually above that swollen area or crook, then that is still the tree that you want if you want to give it a chance to grow.
And if it's right at that crook?
Oh, geez.
That's what I think he's saying.
That's hard to say. Boy. I would probably think it's probably from the rootstock.
Right. That's the odds are yes. For that. All right. This one's from Derek. I was wondering if it's too late to plant rhubarb for future harvesting, not for this year.
If you can find it growing in a pot or container, you can still pot it, plant it. But if you have some that you want to move, I would move probably in September.
All right. Here's a question from Sue. Any suggestions on how to kill mugwort? It's taking over my vegetable garden, and therefore I do not want to use chemicals.
Hoeing and pulling.
Yeah, and persistence. That's persistence. The word. Actually, nearly all weed issues require persistence, so yes. I think that's why it keeps coming up.
All right. Here's a question from Aaron in Ames. I have a cucumber, which is growing incredibly well and has blossoms all over. However, the blossoms seem to never turn into actual cucumbers. I've had this issue 2 years running. They're cohabitating with a couple hop plants on a climbing trellis, if that matters. Everything seems green and happy otherwise.
Should not matter as far as growing with something else. I will say with the vine crops, though, there are separate male and female flowers on the vines. And for the first couple weeks or so, the vast majority, when they first start to bloom, are male flowers. They cannot develop into fruit. But over time, we see more and more female flowers. So initially, for the first 2 weeks or so, those flowers are male flowers. They're not going to set fruit. If they're starting to form female flowers and they're not forming fruit, we're not getting pollination for some reason. And if they are using insecticides, be very careful using those around cucumbers, because that may be harming the bees and pollinators and preventing pollination. So try to avoid insecticides.
All right. Here's a question from Jenny. When is a good time of year to trim lilac bushes? I'm trying to keep a bush off the air conditioner.
Well, if it's really an issue on the air conditioner, you can prune it off now. I would leave it to whatever's in the way of the air conditioner. The ideal time to do any pruning is going to be right after it's finished flowering.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Bill in Iowa City. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, I bought a cherry tree, and I heard that they don't bear fruit for at least the first 5 years. And last year was the fifth year, and I still haven't seen any fruit. Any idea what the problem might be?
Okay, what type of cherry are we talking about? A sweet cherry, tart cherry?
I think it's a sweet cherry.
Okay. Is it growing well?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Is it blooming at all?
It definitely bloomed last year. I'm not home half the time, so I missed it this year.
Okay. What may be happening is, for example, with sweet cherries, many of those are not self-fruitful, so they may bloom but not set fruit because they need cross-pollination from a different variety or cultivar. That could be an issue there. If they're not blooming, I could think maybe if we had very cold winter temperatures, that could possibly damage or destroy the flower buds themselves. So those are possibilities.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bill. Next up, we've got Dan in Scott County. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Good. What's your question?
I got a couple of small wild cedars. I think they're growing on the edge of the woods, and they're about knee-high, and I wondered when it would be a good time to transplant those.
So you could probably do that this fall, and you can do it throughout the winter if you can dig a hole, and you can do it in the spring as things start to green up again. They're pretty durable plants, so I wouldn't do it right now. I would probably wait till the end of August, first part of September. That's going to be a better time. And then the next best time would be probably late March, early April.
All right. But they are tenacious.
Yes.
So, all right. Here is a question from Chris. We have hibiscus plants that have previously been chest high and loaded with blossoms. This year, they're only knee high. Only one is blooming. Is it time to replace the plants, or do you have other thoughts?
No.
I think it's been a stressful year for things like hibiscus because in certain parts of the state, it's been very dry. So if they've been dry, these plants are under more stress, so they're not going to get as big or as floriferous.
All right. From Mike, I have a couple of sweet peppers with lots of lush leaves but no blooms. Can anything be done to help them along?
Again, I think that's a temperature issue. Make sure they have plenty of water when it's dry, and then hope for moderate weather, temperature-wise.
All right. And Matt, I'm growing a miniature variety of cantaloupe, and I'm starting to see the beginnings of fruit. Do I need to prune or remove some of the fruits to ensure that a few get to maturity?
No.
Leave them on.
All right. And finally, this is a much harder question from Angie. I have a problem with Japanese beetles in my rose garden this year. You and everyone else, Angie, what can I do to solve this problem?
Well, the good news is they should be gone in about 2 weeks. That's the good news. In the meantime, you can use an insecticide, but you may have to spray often.
All right. And you're not alone.
No.
Definitely not.
Means. All right. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Aaron Stile, thank you.
You are welcome.
Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced at Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Ben Stanton, Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can email us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.